Spirit Blade Underground, episode 450. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 450.
And welcome again to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. That's something I definitely need this week, so I hope that going through that process of equipping, encouraging, and inspiring, and finding inspiration in truth, and in contemplating truth, that you guys will benefit from that process that I'm going through this week as well. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, a review of the Belko experiment, and some thoughts on wealth and contentment that I've just kind of been thinking through and working through this week, from 1 Timothy and Psalm 84. All right, here we go. The Belko experiment. Let's see here. Let's look at the premise. The synopsis, according to IMDb, is: in a twisted social experiment, 80 Americans are locked in their high-rise corporate office in Bogota, Colombia, and ordered by an unknown voice coming from the company's intercom system to participate in a deadly game of kill or be killed. This is, it's like a mashup of The Office, Saw, and The Purge all in one movie. So if that sounds like a good time to you, just skip this review and go watch the movie. It's only about 90 minutes, and it has brief introductions to some key characters and just kind of presents the tone of the office atmosphere, like who kind of is friendly with who and who kind of doesn't like everybody, and, you know, who are the nice people, who are the weirdos and stuff like that, you know. And it does a good job of, like, handling that economically so that really, right away, it can get into the premise. You're not spending, like, the first 20 to 30 minutes really getting to know these people. I would have liked a little bit more of getting to know some of these characters and understanding their backstories, what makes them tick, what motivates them, so that I could feel more tension when their life is on the line later on. But I still thought that they used the time well before the premise kind of kicked into gear. And then at that point, it's just about watching desperation erode morals among a powerful few, while the rest are just kind of trying to survive, trying to help each other, some of whom, in just rare instances, in desperation, kind of ultimately become killers themselves. It's a tense movie with, like, I would say frequent spurts of dark humor to go along with all the murder and mayhem. There's probably some office rage fantasies that cubicle workers will appreciate most. I'm not sure if that's a healthy thing or not, but, you know, just kind of the way that they'll use office supplies to do each other in. It's not like, and it's not done like in a really comical way. I mean, I didn't find it really even darkly funny. I suppose some people would find it dark. Maybe if I worked in an office with a cubicle and saw those kinds of office supplies every day, it would mean a little bit more to me, or be funnier or something like that. But anyway, like I said, I wish that they would have gotten into backstories a little bit more, but it's not that big of a deal. Mostly we have black and white hats during this movie, and you kind of figure out pretty early on who's going to go black hat and who's going to stay white hat, with only rare instances of people who I would say are truly reluctant killers. You know, I mean, everybody's kind of a reluctant killer, except for, like, maybe three of them, you know, who kind of lose it pretty quick. But I didn't really feel the angst of their decision to kill somebody, except in rare cases where somebody who'd been a white hat for a while, and you could argue is still a gray hat or a white, still a white hat, you know. That's kind of the interesting thing about a movie like this is it explores these kinds of moral concepts of moral gray areas, but in these really extreme terms, you know. Normally what we would do is just kind of like very all too easily apply moral judgments to gray areas, say, yeah, that's fine, oh, that's fine, da da da, and we just kind of, ah, whatever, you know, we just kind of shrug and say, that's fine, you know. But this really brings out the kind of moral gray areas by having the moral actions, the moral choices be so extreme, you know, life and death and that kind of thing. So I do appreciate a movie of this kind. The cast I thought was really solid. You know, there's not a whole lot more they had to do than just kind of like be scared or be crazy, you know, and is these kind of like somewhat extreme emotions, but I mean, they all, I thought, did a fine job. And there was also some nice comedic performances as well. Let's see here. Oddly, the comedic performances, like the comedic moments in the movie, would make me cringe because there were just enough of them that, like, right after the punchline, boom, somebody dies, you know. So it was kind of odd that I was, like, smiling and cringing at the same time through a number of parts in this movie. As far as the stunts and visuals go, there's lots of gore and blood. There's nothing groundbreaking, really, except for there's one scene where a dude, I'm not going to say more than a dude, he gets hit in the head with a blunt instrument, and they show his head caved in, and he's still awake briefly. And it's I mean, yeah, I was just mesmerized by it. It was so good that it kind of took me out of the moment of the movie, you know, because I've never seen someone's head kind of get caved in like that before, and it looked so real to me. I was like, that is really disturbing, you know. So wow, I thought that was really impressive. That feels really weird to say, wow, that caved in head was really impressive. Anyway, as far as like relevance, you know, when I watch a movie like this or play a video game, I always try to ask myself, is there anything of worthwhile moral or philosophical significance that might stimulate worthwhile thought or conversation as a result of taking part in the experience? And you know, in movies like this, and I think certainly in the case of this movie, you could bring up, if you wanted to, the question of the value of human life. This reminded me a little bit of the Walking Dead season premiere, which I did a video on that you can check out on this channel, and I don't want to go down that rabbit trail too much, but The Walking Dead, I think, really kind of maybe overemphasizes a bit the ultimate virtue of survival. Like, survival is a virtue, you know, even more than, you know, maybe self-sacrifice in some instances. I don't know. It's hard to say. I do think that show leans a little bit on holding up survival as too high of a virtue. And this movie and movies like it, you know, bring that question of the value of human life. How important is it to survive? How high a priority should that be? And then also, does human life lose its value as it is, say, closer to death? I mean, like, one of the things that was that some people were resolving to try and do in this movie was, okay, let's take the people that are older and let's kill them, because the premise of the movie, I can't remember if it said, yeah, this much is revealed in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler. But they basically, a voice comes over the intercom and says, okay, we're going to give you blank amount of time to kill 30 people among you, however you see fit. If you don't do that, 60 people will be killed by us, by the means that we have available to us. And after, you know, and then basically they demonstrate how they can pull that off easily without, and people realize, wow, we have no ability to stop them from killing us. It is clear to all the characters they can't stop the powers that be in control of the situation from taking their lives if they want to follow through on that threat. So then the question, you know, becomes, you know, should we kill people in order to keep other people alive, you know? And the position that I would take, and I kind of expressed this in my video about The Walking Dead, is that really, as long as there is a choice of someone involved, and maybe even if there isn't a choice of someone involved, but I think particularly in this case, let's just look at this situation. If there's a choice of someone else involved, you know, if someone says, I'm going to kill 5 people unless you kill 1 person, then I think, I'm not saying I would have the fortitude to make this choice, but I believe that the moral choice in that situation is to say, I'm not going to kill anybody. I will not be responsible for anyone's death, but you will be responsible if you choose to follow through on the threat you've just given to me and kill these 5 people, you know? Now, if you have a purely naturalistic or atheistic worldview, then you might override that by saying, this is the only life we have. This is life is the most important thing. We've got to hold on with all that we have to life, 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 and nothing else compares to that value, you know. But from a theistic viewpoint, or specifically a Christian viewpoint, this is just a dot. This life is just a dot on the line of eternity. A very significant dot in terms of like the choices that we make, but it is just a dot on the line of eternity. And so losing our life here it has very, very little significance when compared to the weight of eternity that comes after this life. So anyway, yeah, I just thought that was interesting to kind of see those these different kind of views of life play out. And I think it was noteworthy that, let's see, what did I say in my notes here? Oh yeah, this is something that you only tend to see in horror movies. I think the last time I saw this in a movie was, I can't remember the name of it. I reviewed it a long time ago. But anyway, the villains here have this cold survivalist mentality. They're the bad guys, the script and the movie is telling us. The bad people are the ones that are obsessed with survival and are just willing to do a numbers game, you know, to allow the most people to survive or allow themselves to survive or whatever. And it's a survivalist view that kind of smells like cold Darwinism just applied to morality, you know. And I think if you just apply Darwinistic evolution to morality, I think that is what you end up with. You have to invade the concept of evolution with some kind of other objective moral framework in order to avoid that kind of thing being something that we just accept and we can't really say, well, yeah, there's nothing wrong with just kind of doing whatever it takes to survive, you know. I think some other kind of objective source for morality has to be injected into that scenario in order to hold to something other than a cold survivalist view. The villains, there are also villains in this movie that are scientists, you know, which is interesting. You know, in there are certain types of movies where like kind of like the organized church will be evil. That's usually in like fantasy types of novels and role-playing games and stuff like that, and video games. If it's at a fantasy setting, then like the religious people are often evil. And in a horror setting like this with a little splash of sci-fi, the scientists are frequently the villains, you know. But I would say that, you know, I want to be clear, science is not evil. I think this whole pitting of science and faith or science and religion is just an artificial, unnecessary kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? War or battle or contest between the two. But I would say that any pursuit, whether it's scientific or artistic, etc., that's unbound by morality, that's grounded in the absolute nature of God's character, it becomes evil. And I think an example of a game that kind of explores that a bit, not so much the idea of morality being grounded in God's nature, but just like science and art unbound becomes unbound by morality becomes evil, is a BioShock. I think that's a great example of that idea being explored. So anyway, I have no idea what your tastes are in movies, but if I were a time traveler, I'd go back in time and say, Pater. Yeah, this is your kind of thing. It's a cool, intense flick. It's one that you're probably going to enjoy. You know, you liked The Cube, you liked The Thing, and other horror movies that kind of play on people's paranoia and humans kind of being broken by, you know, mentally broken by these just insane circumstances. It's light on sci-fi elements, but just the situation is so extreme that it kind of has enough of a sci-fi feel to it, if that's what you're looking for. It's funny and suspenseful, but probably not one that you need to see more than once. Although definitely check it out and keep your your ears or eyes or whatever, your radar blooping for a sequel, because it seems like, even though there's a, you know, there's kind of like horror movie resolution where it's not completely resolved, but you could just end it here, it does seem like it's wide open and ready for a sequel. So anyway, it's rated R for strong bloody violence throughout, language, including sexual references, and some drug use. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, and Helix Reviews. For more info about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
This week at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, you can find episode 2
of my Gloomhaven solo playthrough, which I've been having fun with that. So I'm not sure how long it'll continue. It'll kind of depend on how popular that series is. The views, really, I got a lot of views on that first one. The second one, I noticed, oh, there's a significant drop off. But then I remembered, oh, I forgot to post this and submit it for the Gloomhaven page content at Board Game Geek. So I submitted episode 2. So we'll see if maybe that boosts the views a little bit. So anyway, but yeah, as long as there seems to be people that are interested in watching it, I'll probably keep doing it, unless it, you know, starts dipping down to like, 4 views per video, then I'll probably keep playing the game myself and maybe even keep recording. But I won't necessarily post any more episodes. Why would you do that, Peter? Why would you keep recording? I don't know. You should also by now be able to find my Belko experiment review up at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. And while you're there, if you want to like, share, or subscribe, that does help to grow that channel and the Christian Geek Central community. So I hope you'll consider doing that. As a reminder, guys, I want your voice and your interests to be a part of this podcast, not just me blabbing around. Also Christian Geek Central. So this, both of those things, I'd love your voice and interests to be a part of it. So whether you have an idea for a segment or something like that already, or just want to be a part of the fun, we want to find a way to plug you in and let your voice be heard. And it also is a great way to promote what you're doing if you'd like. So for more info, please email me at paeter@spiritblade.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
In this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language that we often take for granted, digging into history and languages when I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in Scripture. I'm just a guy using resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth, and I hope you'll do that with me. This time, we're taking a break from the book of Ephesians, and a big part of that is just because this week has been a crazy week for me. I have done very little Spirit Blade Productions related work. I did just enough basically to get a review out. I had already, had recorded and edited content in the can for another episode of the Gloomhaven playthrough. And then I'm doing this podcast, but that's recording and editing, the podcast and watching and recording the review. Very little, very, very little, because we are in the middle of both selling our house and trying to find and buy another house to move into. We're very blessed that we have buyers that snatched up our house, made an offer we were very happy with, 3 days after it was on the market. But they also want to move in fast, which means we got to get out fast, which means by April 19th, we got to be out of this house. And that is that's just over 4 weeks from now. So yeah, we're a little bit stressed out. And the next home we move into, we want it to be the home that we are in until we're empty nesters, So, probably the next 15 or 20 years, probably closer to 20 years is what we'd like then, And so that's a really tough decision to make in a very short period of time. And, but what it's brought to light for me, is just some weakness in my character, which, I've always known, that I'm weak, but this just really reminded me of, some specific areas where I'm weak in. And, that's in the areas of trusting God, and in being content with what I have and what God provides, and just having the right perspective on wealth and possessions. And so I thought what I would do with the In Search of Truth segment this week, normally if you're new to the podcast, normally what I do is take us through books of the Bible. And we just kind of go, we take a cluster of verses at a time, and we just make our way verse by verse, chapter by chapter, through, you know, a single book of the Bible. Every once in a while, I'll take a break and do something topical, which is kind of what this is. But usually when I do something topical, it still is a much more a combination of, like, you know, I want to say academic. That makes it sound too, more lofty than it is. But a more studious type of exegesis of the text. So in other words, investigating what the text is saying. And what the original intent of the author was in writing those words and choosing those words and the historical context and stuff. And then after getting as best a sense of that as I can, applying it to our lives and then further our lives specifically as geeks, you know. And so this is going to be a little bit more on, I suppose, just the meditative application side. There's a little bit in here that I'll share that's, you know, of more of like a historical and linguistic background type stuff, but not as much probably as what this segment usually is. This is just kind of me sharing a little bit of my diary, as it were, my mental diary. I don't really keep a diary, not faithfully anyway. And I want to just kind of share that experience with you. So this week, I originally was just going to focus on Psalm 84, but then I also saw some stuff from 1 Timothy that I want to share. And I don't have many thoughts on the 1 Timothy verses, but anyway, let me just read here from the ESV version of the Bible. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. It says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs." And then picking up a little later, same chapter, 1 Timothy 6, verses 17 through 19, it says, "As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life." So those were just great verses for me. I mean, maybe, you know, we can look at these verses about wealth and say, well, you know, I'm not obsessed with money. I'm not obsessed with riches, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But really, this is these verses aren't just about currency, you know. I don't know many people who are actually obsessed with acquiring currency. There's something beyond that that they want to buy with the currency, some kind of possession, some kind of pleasurable thing. And I think that's the heart of what's going on and what's being talked about here, that we can't take anything out of this world. We brought nothing into it. And this verse here, "But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content." And that just kind of stops me dead in my tracks, because we're thinking about far more than food and clothing as we think about a new house. And I think we're thinking about good things, you know. We're thinking about, like, okay, how can we be in a place where the boys will, our two boys will be able to go to good schools, you know? How can we be in a place where we will not increase the distance to our local church so it doesn't become easier and easier to kind of be less involved in what's going on there, you know? You know, we're thinking about, how can we have a home that for two people who both work at home is going to function well for that, and yet we'll still have room and space for a restful environment? There's something kind of, you know, when you work at home, it can be hard to kind of disconnect and check out. Not as much for Holly, who, you know, has these a more regimented kind of work schedule, but for me, you know, I mean, I even do a lot of playing in my office that I work in. It kind of serves as multi-purpose, and so it can be really hard for me to disconnect from work, and I need to be able to do that. So there's all these different things that we don't need, but we're wanting, you know. And yet, if I don't have an office that's going to serve better than the one I have now, or even if I have an office space or a workspace that's going to be less suited to what I'm doing than now, even if we go to live in a place where our boys are not able to go to the schools we want them to go to, and in fact maybe have to go to kind of rough schools, you know, even if we have these various difficult things to deal with, we can be content. Because Paul says here, if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. That he has what he needs to survive and remain alive in this life to continue serving God. And it might not always, you know, seem like it's the best route to go to maximize the potential that you have as a human being. But you know what? That's not necessarily what this life is for. And there may be some things, some difficult things that we're meant to learn and experience, you know. And that's what I've been failing to kind of have a willingness to embrace this week. To embrace the difficulty that Christ might have for me to go through, to a small degree in which I might share in his suffering. Anyway, those who fall into temptation, desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It all just starts there with a love for stuff that can drive us to have bitterness, jealousy, anger. You know, we can think that we're entitled to these things or that these things are kind of the key to a fulfilling life or an enjoyable life, you know? So it's through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. I can totally see how that can happen and does happen. The truth is, we have far more than food and clothing. We are, as I'll bring up sometimes with Holly, you know, as we're just kind of talking about various things, we are very wealthy. We are very wealthy, you know, in relative to the people that we live around, like in our church community, we're actually probably to the lower half of the income, you know, that would be average to our church. But we are hugely wealthy. And I've heard it said, I haven't, you know, researched this myself, but I believe it because it sounds absolutely reasonable, that if you are in welfare living in the United States, then you are wealthy by comparison to most of the people alive on planet Earth. And there's just a ton of people living in other places in the world that we don't on a day-to-day basis think about, wow, that country has a massive population and most of them are living like this and it's horrible, you know? So I think that these verses from where I'm going with that is I think these verses in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19 apply to us. I think if you're listening to this podcast, you have access to the internet, even if that's just through a free public library. I'm guessing that's not even the case for most of us who are, you know, for me recording this, obviously, and for those of you listening. But even if your situation is, you know, you're living down at the Y and you're going to the library and you're listening to this podcast, there are resources and comforts available to you that are just that just by nature of being where you are makes you wealthy. And so I think that even these verses apply to those of us in that situation. 1 Timothy 6, verses 17 through 19. As for the rich in this present age, believe it or not, that is you and me, the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches. I've done that. And the hope for me having a good, restorative, regenerative weekend, I will place that hope on the time, you know, how much time I can spend playing a video game or watching a movie or doing some fun thing. That's my hope for rejuvenation. Nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They, the rich, are to do good and to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for their future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. And he's talking about eternity there and the blessings and the rewards that we as believers can gain from investing in God's kingdom work right now. Yeah, they are to do good, to be rich and good. No, notice that it doesn't say they are to get rid of their money, give it all away so that they are poor, like, you know, whoever. You know, scripture is not that. Especially under the new covenant, it's about the heart. It's not about this certain checklist of, okay, be sure that you're giving this percent and you only keep this percent of your income, or only you only have this dollar amount, da 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 da. No, this is these are timeless words that break beyond whatever the current economic system is and standard is that they are read in. They are timeless. So the wealthy are not necessarily meant to stop being wealthy by comparison to others in the world or others around them, but they're to do good in the context of being wealthy. They're to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. So looking for ways to leverage our income, our possessions, to bring enjoyment to others, to invest in relationships, I think, with others, to gain a voice in the lives of others. You know, that's what hospitality can do. And that's, you know, it's one of the things that Holly and I are looking for in our new house, is a house where we can, despite being introverts and really liking, you know, I like time by myself a lot more than Holly does. She's much more welcoming of, you know, people and getting together with people and stuff. But, you know, we want to have a house where we can have people over, you know. And in that way, store up treasure for ourselves as a good foundation for the future, as Paul says, so that we can take hold of that which is truly life. I'm saying this not because I've lived this out this week. I've failed at this, and that's not God's failing. That's my failing to recognize and remember truth. This segment's probably going to go on longer than I thought it would. Anyway, let's move on to Psalm 84 now. And I'm actually not going to read the whole thing first. I'm going to just go through a few one or two verses at a time and then make a few comments. But this psalm is where you could call it old now, I suppose. But better is one day in your courts. Better is one day in your house. Better is... You guys know that one? Than thousands elsewhere, than thousands elsewhere. So... Psalm 84 is where that comes from. Verses 1 and 2, and this is all from the ESV, says, "How lovely is your dwelling place, O Yahweh of hosts! My soul longs, yes, faints, for the courts of Yahweh. My heart and flesh sing for joy to the living God." The temple, or the courts, you know, the tabernacle, which the temple was based off of, the temple was a place of connection and reconciliation to Yahweh. The tabernacle served the same purpose. So properly understood, it was a place that reflected God's love and forgiveness as well as his holiness, which is why we can understand why he would say, "How lovely is your dwelling place. My soul longs, yes, faints for the courts of Yahweh." Because the psalmist understood. He understood what was being communicated and what we talked about, you know, when we did all that Old Testament stuff, getting ready to go through the book of Hebrews. You can refer back to that. And you know, we just uncovered the beauty behind what is at a surface glance seems to be this very ritualistic thing. All that ritualistic stuff, it was saying things about who God is. It was saying things about his love and forgiveness and his holiness. And so today, I think, by way of application, I think the equivalent of the courts of Yahweh today may be dedicated time with Yahweh, the Holy Spirit, in which we reflect on and experience his love, his forgiveness, and reflect on an awareness of his holiness, and all those things operating together, his holiness, his love, his forgiveness. In the future, the equivalent of the courts will be an unending experience of relationship with Yahweh in which we experience unfiltered his love, his forgiveness, and his holiness all at the same time. Verse 3 says, "Even the sparrow finds a home and the swallow a nest for herself where she may lay her young at your altars, O Yahweh of hosts, my King and my God." And this is interesting. And by the way, these notes were taken a couple years ago when I was going through the book of Psalms with my mentor. So the birds mentioned here, this is interesting, are common birds. sparrow, swallow, common birds. They're not rare or precious. So the observation seems to be that the courts, as it were, are a place accessible even to the common and the lowly. Verse 4 says, "Blessed are those who dwell in your house, ever singing your praise." And the word for blessed there in the Hebrew essentially means happy. I mean, it can be a little more nuanced than that, but just, you know, generally it just means happy. So the note I put there for myself is feeling unhappy, well then dwell in God's presence and sing his praise. And I failed to do that a lot this week. And in the moments that I did remember, which were far fewer than usual, my perspective shifted, and that's when I had greater contentment and even happiness, you know. Which the Hebrew, you know, that's some of the nuance of the Hebrew word for blessed or happy, is there's the contentment's kind of wrapped up in there. Verse 5, "Blessed are those whose strength is in you, in whose heart are the highways to Zion." And the note I put there is, count on God's sovereignty before you count on your capabilities. Neglecting this leads away from happiness. And then for those who are curious, the second half of the verse is unclear to scholars, in whose hearts are the highways to Zion. It could refer to a pilgrimage to Jerusalem or procession around it, or maybe parallel to the ever singing your praise phrase from verse 4 and related to that idea in some way. Verse 6, "As they go through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. The early rain also covers it with pools." Baca may have been a valley in Palestine. However, the word Baca means weeping. In either case, the idea seems to be that those whose strength is in Yahweh experience refreshment and or sustenance regardless of circumstances. Verse 7, it continues saying, "They go from strength to strength." You know, those who are trusting in Yahweh. They go from strength to strength. Each one appears before God in Zion. Those who trust in Yahweh, is my note here says, experience strength in a variety of ways and circumstances. In a note that I wrote, this is more of a diary type thing that I wrote next to this. This was a note on July 14th, 2015, so almost a couple years ago. I wrote, "Why do I so often feel weak? Possibly because I define success, quote unquote, on a given day as achieving my intended goals, which I never clearly define and so are bound to never be met anyway. But even if I defined them, I may still be met with failure and the feeling of weakness. Perhaps the secret of strength is continually confessing my weakness, my inability, and my foolishness, and praising Yahweh that despite all of that, I am still on his timetable and am still able to invest my feeble efforts in a part of his agenda." Verses 8 and 9, "O Yahweh, God of hosts, hear my prayer. Give ear, O God of Jacob. Behold our shield, O God. Look on the face of your anointed." So this is an appeal to God as the God of Israel, you know, which is the name given to Jacob, the new name given to him by God, and that the his descendants as a nation took as you know, they identifying them. So it's an appeal to God as the God of Israel, the God of Jacob, asking him to look on the king. That's what's meant by anointed there. And shield, behold our shield, O God, it says. Shield is also considered to be referencing the king, which can possibly demonstrate it through its parallel to anointed in the two phrases of verse 9. So this is not as relevant to my situation, my housing situation, but in times of uncertainty, when we are comparing the blessedness, the contentment, the happiness of being in the presence of God with what the world offers, what we can gain with the world, there's this plea for God to look upon our leaders. You know, it's tough to kind of make too much of a parallel between, like, you know, the president of the United States and, you know, this was a theocracy, you know, as Israel was when this was written. So it's a, you know, kind of a different situation. Oh, I suppose it's not a direct theocracy. I mean, they had the kings in place, you know, at that time. But I think you understand kind of what I'm getting at. I don't want to make too much of kind of a parallel here. But I do take this at least as a reminder of, you know, when we're in these situations, to say, God, direct your attention to our leaders. And it doesn't otherwise say really, what God ought to do in that. If there's blessing involved there, probably that's probably the appeal going on there. But that's certainly something we could pray for, is God, would you just bless our leaders, because they influence so much what our situation is. And so we pray that you would bless our leaders and their thinking and their choices. Verse 10, for a day in your courts is better than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness. A day in the presence of God within his temple courts is, you know, what's the ideas here, is better than 1,000 away from him. Why? Well, maybe because the temple was a reminder of God's love, his forgiveness, his desire for relationship and his redemption. Also, it's better to be a doorkeeper under God's agenda and in his kingdom than to dwell in a lifestyle of wealth acquired wickedly. I say that because this word wickedness, than to dwell, you know, be a doorkeeper in the house of my God, than dwell in the tents of wickedness, that Hebrew word actually means wealth acquired wickedly. So I'd rather dwell, be a doorkeeper in the house of my God, than dwell in the tents of wealth acquired wickedly. My note after that was that I will feel defeated in direct proportion to how much I base my significance on my accomplishment. And my note to self was just, Peter, get your eyes off of reputation and just be a doorkeeper today. Just be a doorkeeper today. It's 1,000 times better than trying to maintain a reputation. Verse 11, for Yahweh God is a sun and shield. Yahweh bestows favor and honor. No good thing does he withhold from those who walk uprightly. Yahweh reveals truth, and as this is possibly linked with other light imagery in Isaiah 60 Malachi 4, Yahweh reveals truth and future restoration. And he's also our protector, our shield. Yahweh is in charge of who receives favor and honor. He's in charge of that. He also doesn't withhold anything good from those who walk in wholeness and perfection with him. And this is where you and I are as believers in Jesus. When things are not going as you and I hoped or planned, we ought to return quickly and firmly to this truth. God is not withholding anything that is truly good from you. And that whatever he seems to be withholding that is good is in service to bringing about a far better good. Romans 8:28 says, and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. And additionally, when things go wrong, they're really just going different to line up better with Yahweh's perfect plan. Proverbs 19:21 says, many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of Yahweh that will stand. And this would have been right around the time where I made the choice to print out those two verses and put them on the wall over my computer and on the one of the doors leading out of my office. Just having that reminder that, you know what? And then I added that phrase, things go different more often than they go wrong. When things seem to be going wrong, they're really just going different to line up better with Yahweh's perfect plan. Because as Proverbs 19:21 says, many are the plans in the mind of a man, certainly true of this man, but it is the purpose of Yahweh that will stand. So why not just try to get on board with Yahweh's purpose? And then lastly, verse 12, O Yahweh of hosts, blessed is the one who trusts in you. And my note here to myself was, this is what it all comes down to. Happiness is found by trusting Yahweh instead of yourself. So again, these aren't things that I share with you. And really, it's never my intent to come across in these segments as I'm sharing these things from a position of, these are lessons I've learned and put into practice and now I'm, you know, now you should do that too, you know? I mean, there may be some areas, some things I've put into practice to a greater degree than you have, but really the intent and my mentality in all of this is that I don't do these things. I don't apply these things as I should in my life. And these things are for me to learn. And I'm sensing that and feeling that even more this week, as I've just kind of seen my own weakness more than usual, and just been grateful for God's grace. And and I feel like that's why, you know, it's I kind of shrug. I'm not shamed, you know, to share that with you guys, because I have the grace of Jesus that is rescuing me and that is restoring me and has his record painted over my own. And if you're a believer in Jesus, then you have that too. And so I hope that these words are encouraging to you. I hope that, or maybe convicting. I don't know. I don't know what the Holy Spirit might be doing in you, but we can't do much better than to try to listen when the Holy Spirit is speaking to us and say, "What are you saying to me right now? What do you want me to do?" Give me the strength to trust you. And to trust and recognize that as much as I enjoy so many of the things that I have in life, as much as I want to enjoy those things, and as much as those things are good to enjoy and are gifts from you, ultimately, let me trust in you. Let me depend on you for my happiness and my fulfillment and my security. And let me die to myself and my desire to hold on to those other things in the vain hope that they can somehow make me happy. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you guys to do that. You can send me an email or an audio file recorded on your phone if you want to play it on the podcast at PAETER@spiritblade.com. All right, well, let me just briefly pray. The only refreshed or new prayer request that I saw on the forums this week was my own. But I'm betting in some form, though maybe in different circumstances, you can relate to some of the same things that I want to pray for right now. So pray with me if you would. Holy Spirit, would you give us contentment and in our circumstances, no matter what those circumstances are? Let us recognize the blessing of having food and clothing and be content with that. And help us to let go of the reins, just the control that we seek to have over our lives, our circumstances, the degree of pleasure we're being fed every day. Would you help us to just let go of that and die to those desires and trust you instead? Would you give us wisdom in the middle of difficult choices that we may have to make this week? Would you give us a willingness to set aside, again, die to ourselves and set aside our desires, and give us the ability to see opportunity for serving you and serving others, no matter what our circumstances are? In your name we pray. Amen. All right. That's it, guys. I'm tired. It's been a long week. We might be really close now. We might be really close. There's as I record this on Thursday, and this, you know, information will be out of date because I'll be posting this episode sometime on Friday. But as I post this on Thursday, the inspections are done for our house, for those who are buying our house, and we have every reason to think that's going to continue going forward. But, you know, it's not over till it's over. And then also we've put in an offer for a house that we think is going to be just great. It's still not our dream house, and that's what made the decision kind of difficult. But we have exhausted every option in our price range. We have experimented with letting go of certain things in our list of priorities, and we've just, you know, turned this thing over and over and over and over and tried to, you know, be open to all kinds of possibilities. And after doing all of that, our options still seemed so limited for really what we felt was going to be a good fit for where we think we're headed in the future, and where we've been now for a while, now that we have a sense of what our lives look like. So anyway, that's been a tough decision to make, and there's still some things that we'd like to be different about the house that we want to buy, but they're all things that we think in time we can change to make it, you know, just exactly the fit that we want to have. But in the meantime, it's still just all, it's hard. And even when you feel like, we feel really confident about this choice. It's not like, this house will work, you know. I think we're both, me more so than Holly, I think. But I think we're both in the place where, like, we really like this house. We really like this house, you know. And all the other options are significantly further down. There's maybe like one or two that would be like, yeah, if this one dropped off the face of the earth, then these other houses would be really good too. But then after that, every other option is just like, oh no, 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 no. So it's hard. It's hard to and to be so crunched for time to have to make this decision that is going to affect our family for such a long time, you know. That or risk just letting it go and then seeing no other houses pop up on the market maybe for the next 2 years while we rent something or whatever. I mean, you know, so really, really tough decision to make. But we've put out the offer. We think it's a good offer. We're asking, you know, we're giving them what they, you know, their asking price. And we've got a few other items that we think are absolutely reasonable. And it sounds like the buyer is just wanting to kind of get rid of this house. And so we're... You know, we think that we're going to be blessing them with the offer that we're giving them, and we think the house will be a big blessing to us. So let me just tell you guys, it has been wonderful to work with a realtor who's a believer and a lender who's a believer, who they're not trying to manipulate. You know, I mean, there's room for... I should have put this in the In Search of Truth segment, but it's a little more random right here. So this is the random section of the podcast. But it's been wonderful to work with people who are believers, and they're trying to be, you know, shrewd and strategic, but they're not trying to manipulate anybody. You know, it's one thing to negotiate and try to compromise and find a middle ground. It's another thing to try and manipulate the other person into feeling a certain way, and as a result, kind of give you something that they might not ordinarily. You know, the distinction between those two, I think, is what's going on in the heart. You know, those are two conversations that can look absolutely identical. One in which you are just negotiating and trying to find, a compromise that both parties can agree on. That's one thing, and that's what I'm so happy that the lender and our realtor, that's where their hearts are at. But then there's that other side, you know, where it's about trying to manipulate the other person, you know, and push them and tweak them and, you know, get the best, you know, all the money or whatever, you know, and just kind of thinking about yourself. So I'm just so grateful to be working with the people we're working at and doing business in a way that I think is God-honoring. I think so. It's always a tainted mix and mess of things, isn't it? You know, when you evaluate your own heart. But anyway, that's it. If anybody cares, I'm sure I'll be updating on the forms in the prayer request section, the drama of this whole house thing. Normally I wouldn't even talk about this kind of thing, you know, but I work at home, and so this has a direct impact on what is going to be coming from Spirit Blade Productions in the future, how easily, how quickly it'll be coming, the quality in which it will come, you know, everything that I do, you know. We're buying not just a house, but we're also buying kind of two offices, and a production office and studio, you know. So anyway, updates at the forums at ChristianGeekCentral.com. That's it, guys. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it, I'll be reviewing the movie Life, which I've been very curious about and looking forward to watching. And then I don't know if I'll be commenting on the podcast or not, but you can look at the YouTube channel at YouTube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, where I will probably have a trial and error video in the back half of the week for Mass Effect Andromeda. What about Power Rangers, Pater? Where's that Power Rangers review? You gonna review Power Rangers? Till then, check out SpiritBlade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you guys. Thank you so much. Does anybody else want to review Power Rangers? I'm morbidly curious, guys. I'm morbidly curious. I just think, but I was just like, I was like, if there is nothing else on the calendar for me to talk about that's geek related, then I will sit through Power Rangers. But otherwise, excuse me. Anyway, thank you guys so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week, and you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth. All right, time to go see if our realtor got back to us with those documents to sign.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Something's coming through the wormhole.
Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
And that was Second Skin, a Cardassian, what's real and what's not kind of typical Star Trek mind screw.
Okay, two things about this episode. Number one, earlier we had Second Sight, which sucked. Now we have Second Skin, which is actually pretty good.
I'm just waiting for the episode Skin Sight, and we don't know what to think of that one.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, as soon as we started watching this episode, I had to know whether this followed or preceded the episode in The Next Generation. Face of the Enemy, where Troy is surgically altered into a Romulan. And it turns out that this was about a year and a half later than that one.
I wouldn't be surprised if this episode was kind of a revisiting of the idea of one of our main characters is surgically altered to look like one of the enemy aliens. Mm-hmm. Only this one is not built on... like in the Troy episode, she knew she was altered right away. There was no questioning about her memories. This one is Kira is kidnapped and taken to Cardassia and told that she was a secret undercover operative all these years. All her memories are faked. It's basically like a Total Recall type story.
Yeah, she was always a Cardassian who had been altered and had her memory futzed with to think she was a Bajoran to make her the perfect agent.
And Star Trek has done lots of these mind screw episodes, and I have to say, more often than not, they're really good. And this is a good one. You know, where you don't know what's real and what's not. Again, like Total Recall, except for Star Trek, they always fall on they come down clearly on whether it is or isn't real and what was happening. They don't want you to do the we don't know what really happened kind of thing. They want you to know what the final answer is. They just want you to figure it out and wonder what's going on as you go on the ride. And this episode is really good. We don't want to go into too many details because this is one of those mysteries and discovering what's going on is part of it. So spoilers would really ruin it.
But yeah, it's interesting. I really like the actor, the older Cardassian actor that they have playing a lot of scenes against Kira.
Gamor is his name.
Yeah,
the character's name.
Yeah, the character is a very amiable character.
Yeah, he's a very good, open, honest guy. And Kim and I were talking about, in this episode you see some despicable evil Cardassians and you see some really good Cardassians. And I noticed that this in other cases too. With Cardassians, with Garak being one of the few exceptions, because he has moments of both, most of your Cardassians are either absolute monsters and inhuman beasts, or they're like the saintliest angels and self-sacrificing and, you know, just wondrous and noble.
Yeah, they're either, you know, will die for their cause and, you know, full of altruism, or else they're, you know, like concentration camp guards full of sadism and greed and everything horrible in the human heart. I mean, it's just...
Seems like Garak and Nakata are about the only two Cardassians that are... or any regulars that aren't an extreme character, that have elements of both to them.
And I'd say Dukat is pretty firmly on the jerk side.
But he is complicated and well-rounded.
He has complications.
But we don't want to talk too much about Dukat because he's not even in this episode, and he does tend to distract. So we'll wait for a Dukat episode to go into Dukat.
But yeah, it's an interesting episode. It's got a lot of backstory that it taps into.
It taps into a lot of continuity, even like, seemingly irrelevant things, but just, this is, and I remember when TJ was talking, that's what he talked about when he was watching a while back, is the whole idea that backstory and continuity are so important that they'll just go out of the way to mention something just to help you feel like this is a real world and these things really happen because we're referring to them, just like you would refer to, last year I went on this vacation to Disneyland, and you'd refer to it.
Just for the sake of verisimilitude, they'll dress the story with a little extra continuity.
Yeah, and it just, those little touches, they reward the people for watching, and, the kind of things that it doesn't hurt if you don't know. Garrick talks about, we went to Bajor last year, and that was in the episode where they went down to check out the Cardassian orphanage and all, but you don't need to know that. It just says, remember when we went last year? Just a nice touch. This episode is also really good because it's got a theme running all throughout, which is, of course, reality and illusion and all that.
Yeah,
and
early on, Kira's talking about meeting Dax in the holosuite.
She doesn't like holosuites because they're illusion. And, we see that over and over. It's about what's real, what isn't real. And, Sisko's using an illusion when he's flying to Cardassia. There's a lot of themes that keep coming up.
Well, and for a lot of times in Trek, we'll have these what is real episodes, usually involving a holodeck.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that they did it with Cardassians because, as we saw again in TNG with Picard in Chain of Command, that's the episode where they torture Captain
Picard. The Four Lights episode.
Yeah, that there are four lights, famous meme. The Cardassians are exactly the sort of people who would love these kind of mind games.
Well, Cardassians and Romulans. They're the two races that love mind screws.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I'd say the changelings like that, too. They do a fair amount of mind screwing.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, imagine Klingons trying to pull a mind screw on your
friend. Klingons are not mind screwers, but...
But no.
Yeah, it's a good source. With the Romulans, they're like a... The Romulans and Cardassians have some similarities because... If you could nail down the Romulans to a real-life society, it would probably be the Roman Empire. And if you could nail down the Cardassians to a real-life society, it would probably be the mob. And if movies are any indication, then a lot of mob high-ups, at least the Italian mob, kind of see themselves almost like the Roman Empire of sorts anyway. So
it
makes sense there's some common elements.
Yet another thing, because we're talking about the similarities of Cardassians to Romulans, this is yet another thing that makes me think the writers of this episode watched Face of the Enemy and said... Let's go that one better.
Yeah. They said, let's turn left when they turned right.
Exactly.
Which is good, because that way it's not a retread of the episode. It's more like, let's take the same idea, but do something different with it. And that's really DS9 in a nutshell.
Let's add some peanut butter to that chocolate.
Yeah, it's like, let's take this and not just retread it. And that's what Voyager was. It was just a tired retread of some of the same ideas. And they didn't do a whole lot that was unique. Probably 7 of 9 and the Doctor were the only unique ones there. They had that, they were... But most of the characters were just tired retreads. But Deep Space Nine really, they said, let's zig. Let's do, instead of the standard story of we come to the brink of war and we walk away, let's come to the brink of war and then go to war. And just that's just an obvious example, but there's lots of that. And here's a great example. They said, well, let's take this and let's examine if they claim that Kira was a Cardassian all along. And I'll tell you this, it's actually possible she could have been a Cardassian all along. I'm not saying that she was or wasn't. I'm saying don't give up on the idea right away. Watch the episode and decide for yourself. There is a definitive answer, but we're not going to ruin it for you.
And we'll catch you back next time with what's next time?
Next time is The Abandoned.
Ooh.
Oh, okay. This one we'll get to learn about a very important group that we've been introduced to recently. Well, we'll tell you right now. They find a Jem'Hadar, so we get to learn all about them.
Dun, dun, dun.
So if you're curious about the Jem'Hadar, here's what we'll learn about them. We'll see you then.